Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of Biz Talks. My name is Rick Gutierrez. I am your host and your business advocate. We are excited for what we have in this particular episode here today. We've got a great lineup of business professionals, business owners that have been there and done that, and so why not learn from them? They want to come on board and showcase their expertise, their knowledge, so they can educate us as we go along throughout the show. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate you tuning in. And this week, we're going to start off the show with someone that we need to have a conversation with, because there is a new administration that has been now in place, have been put in place. And well, there are some changes. There are some law changes. And so I am excited to have this conversation and have welcome back on the show, Ms. Tamina Watson, our favorite immigration attorney. Welcome back to the show, Tamina.
Thank you so much for having me, Rick.
Absolutely. It's always a great conversation, but this particular episode here, I mean, it is early February, and this administration just, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks that, you know, they had just, you know, took over the White Office, and they've done some tremendous things already, because so many things have happened in the last 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. But, you know, the topic for today is basically, employers that are hiring, you know, foreign talent, which is your expertise. Employers want to know, what are the changes that are coming up, if there is any, and or if there is, you know, tell us, you know, what can we expect here in the next year or so as far as hiring foreign talent.
Such a great question, Rick. And you know, there's so much information out there that it's often difficult to understand what is the actual law that applies to you, and how do these executive orders affect your business and your employees. The new president has signed numerous executive orders, and many of them are on immigration. Mm-hmm. The executive order that we haven't seen yet, that I was expecting at least, was called the Buy American, Hire American executive order that was signed during the first administration of the Trump presidency. And that had really curtailed how visa applications were going to be adjudicated. Mm-hmm. So we haven't seen that yet. I think it's coming. But okay. What have we seen? I think we've seen that the administration has put in leadership at different parts of the immigration agencies. And let's talk about them separately. The USCIS is under the Department of Homeland Security, and they just got a new acting director. It's been 2.5 weeks. Cases that we have filed at our office, they're still getting approved. But I do think that we're going to see heightened scrutiny, extra mm-hmm. questions, and possible denials. So what can you do as an employer to mitigate your risks? Number one, the thing that I'm telling all my clients, is you have nothing to be afraid of. You are a business doing bona fide business, running a bona fide operation with bona fide clients. So if you are doing everything in a bona fide way, meaning it's a real and operating business, you're not lying about anything.
Right.
So keep your head up high. Keep your head up high, knowing that you are a real business. Number two, make sure that you are compliant. Brush up on all of the things and all of the aspects of immigration. Make sure your files are updated. You're doing an internal I-9 audit. Make sure that your public access files for H-1Bs are up to date. So basically, make sure you and your HR team are covering all your bases on compliance. And number three, you will find that your employees are probably very scared and anxious about how things are going to unfold. Give yourself the confidence that I'm talking about, but instill it in them. If they are doing the work that you have told the government they will be doing, you have, again, nothing to worry about. So that's on the visa application side internally.
Right.
We are hearing about visa stamping that happens at the consulates are being slowed down already. So we can expect some of the challenges on that front to come along. We are hearing from, I'm on various committees with immigration lawyers and other leaders, and we are hearing that maybe another a ban could be on its way, travel ban. So you need to be aware, keep your ear against the ground, and keep your eye on the news about where your employees are. Are they traveling? Do they really have to travel? Can we not have them travel? Be extra cautious.
Let me ask you a question because I want to go back. I mean, thank you for sharing all of that. It's invaluable information. But I want to go back to something that you mentioned that an executive order that you were expecting but have not seen that yet just yet is the Buy American, Hire American, I think you mentioned. The question is, do you have an inclination as to when you can expect that executive order to be, signed? And what about all of those businesses that make American products but have hired, outside talent, foreign talent? Are they going to be implicated in any way by this executive order?
Very good question. Well, first of all, we don't really know because there have been 112 plus executive orders, and some of them are on businesses, sort of like, we're going to examine our relationship with the NAFTA countries. And I think that you're already seeing some dialogue happening between Mexico and the United States, as well as Canada. And if those tariffs go in, I think there could be some implication on the workforce as well. So I think a lot of things will unfold in the very near future. And so even though this Buy American, Hire American executive order has not been signed, there are probably some implications from the various other executive orders that will have an impact. But I also want to mention Congress has not signed any bills on immigration for decades. But in the last week and a half, a new bill was signed into law, and it's called the Laken-Riley Act. And the
Right.
Laken-Riley Act basically says if you have been charged, arrested, or convicted of a theft, burglary-related crime, you will be removable. Now, a lot of my clients, whether they're businesses hiring employees or founders who are starting their businesses, they have employees who might accidentally have been in trouble in some way or another. Often, one common scenario, not common, but time to time I hear of it, there might be a very frazzled new mother who might be on a visa, who might have, picked up a belt by accident, but somehow not. Have paid for it. It wasn't intentional, but they're so frazzled. That could lead to a charge or an arrest. Is that person now going to be deportable? The Laken-Riley Act says yes. And so I think all businesses might consider having some internal meetings and updates for all of their staff members so that staff members know it. And, use that opportunity to make sure that any person on a visa is aware that these laws are going to impact everybody on all visa types. So I think there are some things businesses can do to have internal updates on the birthright citizenship effect that could happen, the Laken-Riley Act that could have an implication, and general visa scrutiny that is coming.
There is nothing like being completely updated, especially if you have an immigration status. Your employer keeping you updated as well is crucial. Making sure that your employer has all of the information as well and all of the updates so that they can relay that to you is crucial. I think that if we were in a situation where, we have, an immigration status and we don't stay updated, it's only going to harm us because any little incident that we could potentially not even be directly involved in, and you are charged with, even though you were not directly involved with, now there is something on your record, and potentially even if it's something that is interpreted as, you know, moral temperature, I mean, it's something that could potentially damage your status. So staying updated and having someone like Tamina Watson on your side to keep you updated is, you know, crucial, because laws are changing. And things are changing nowadays. New executive orders are being put in place, and so there's nothing like having somebody like Tamina. So Tamina, anything that you'd like to add to our viewers who are business owners that are thinking about for the first time hiring some foreign talent, you know, what is it that you would recommend for them to do first and foremost?
Well, at the moment, the timing is very good, Craig, to just think about the H-1B visa. The window for the once-a-year application is about to open on March 7th, and it will close on March 24th. So if you have the foreign talent that you want to hire on an H-1B visa, this is your window. And it means that you have to start preparing now. And to remind you, the H-1B visa requires a bachelor's degree in a certain subject matter, and you have a job in that particular subject matter. We are still taking cases. Our website is www.watsonimmigrationlaw.com, and you can connect with me on LinkedIn if you want to. But this is your window. And then I just think it's everybody needs to be aware. It's all hands on deck. It doesn't matter what your business is in, you're likely affected by some executive order or another in addition to immigration. So take care of yourself and your business. And my final word to all people inside and outside of the law is that we are in a situation where everything feels overwhelming. So it's going to be important that you find some joy for yourself, to make sure you take time for yourself, for your own well-being. Because business leaders, business owners are leaders within their own business, but in the community.
Absolutely.
And if you can make sure that your leader reflects the calmness that you have, everybody around you will benefit from it.
Absolutely. All right, Tamina, you beat me to the punch. I was going to ask you, how can our clients get in touch with you? But you mentioned that by just visiting your website is the best way to contact you, and or LinkedIn. So we appreciate you coming onto the show. It's a great conversation. There's a lot of information out there that, you know, needs to be relayed to all of our viewers and listeners. So we want to thank you for being on the show once again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. All right, folks, we have come to the end of this particular segment. We are going to go on a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Hey folks, we are back. Thank you for staying tuned in and, you know, joining us on BizTalk. This is the place where we talk to many business professionals, business owners, and in case you're just now tuning in, we are having a ton of fun because we have someone in the studio who is an expert in providing power, particularly when you have no power. So that was very easy, right? So we've got an expert who's been in this industry for a very long time, and he's here to educate us on the importance of being prepared and having everything that you need in order to stay in business when everybody else is out. So I want to welcome Andrew McCain to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's great to have you. I think this conversation, many of our viewers, many of our listeners are going to be tuning in real quick because, as we know, this is not only, you know, Space City, Houston, Texas, right? But it's also known as Hurricane Alley sometimes. When hurricane season starts, you know, everybody's panicking about, you know, we're going to lose power and whatnot. And there's a few of us who have learned through the years that, you know, a backup power generator is the way to go. And if you don't have one, I think, as a matter of fact, I think you can agree that nowadays having a backup power source, it's not a luxury anymore. It's a necessity, particularly for business, right? So I want to let's talk a little bit more about that, but also let's talk about, you know, the power industry's, you know, biggest challenges and where there are some opportunities for improvement there. So first and foremost, let's let our audience know, you know, who you are and your company and what do you guys do aside from what I just explained.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. McCain Power Systems, we're four companies in one. We do logistics, sales, for all power systems, but in this case, we're talking specifically about power and power generators. We have a rental, entire rental group, and then also service. So that's for Houston, greater Houston area, pretty much all of Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana. So.
Okay, cool. And you guys have crews that go all over the place at once?
Yeah.
Wow, pretty amazing. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about those challenges in the power grid. You know, as we know it, Houston is prone to get hit with either hurricanes or sometimes winter storms, and you know, the famous company that we all know talks about always improving and being prepared and whatnot.
For sure.
Which I think this year it wasn't as the winter storm was not as big as the one mm-hmm. in 2021, but I think they did a somewhat of a better job this time
for
around.
Sure.
But let's talk a little bit about those challenges where there's rooms for opportunity, especially for businesses mm-hmm. that should be thinking about maybe getting something installed. Hurricane season is around the
sure.
corner.
So first and foremost, supply and demand, right? Mm-hmm. There is a excess demand right now for power with all the AI data centers going in.
Right.
There is, I mean, I can't even remember the how many gigawatts. I mean, it's like, it's hundreds of millions of kW of power that we are lacking in our infrastructure. So first and foremost, our demand is so high that our supply can't keep up. It's not a matter of when, but if, sorry, opposite of that, it's no
yeah.
matter of if, but when we're gonna have
right.
power outages. There's gonna be more and more rolling brownouts. There's gonna be customers and companies coming for power solutions to sell power back to the grid, so they call them microgrids.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing that more and more as well. But in terms of a small business, medium business, big business, if you don't have a backup power generator, whether or not it be natural gas or diesel,
mm-hmm.
I think that's where everybody needs to be going. And then in the interim, if they don't have that solution, they can have a quick solution of possibly a contingency plan mm-hmm. with rental grade generators that come out there and provide a temporary solution.
Yeah. The reason why we're talking about this, folks, is because as you can imagine, even through the pandemic, there was many businesses that were not able to come back just because they were down for so long. So it doesn't have to necessarily be a pandemic, it just be a huge power outage. So think about that when you're thinking about your business and how long you could potentially be down if you don't have what Andrew's company can provide. So let's talk a little bit about the preparedness for businesses, particularly in the energy regulations and policies. I imagine mm-hmm. that there are some things there that businesses need to consider.
Yeah, so EPA guidelines are pretty clear, especially for backup power. I mean, it's whatever year in which the generator was produced and built, that's the EPA regulations that it needs to meet. So, you know, I don't think any future regulations will affect what you put in now.
Mm-hmm.
That's unprecedented and wouldn't happen. So to kind of get ahead of that, I would start making a plan for your power right now, whether or not it be permanent infrastructure built on your site, whether or not it be a natural gas or diesel backup power generator, or you know, you could keep rolling with a possible contingency plan. Again, it all depends on your level, not being able to be down, but your level of comfortability
right.
of being without power. If it's a necessity, you're gonna have to put something in or at least make a plan.
Right. So being a business owner myself, one of the things that comes up, and I'm thinking many of our viewers who are business owners are probably also thinking about this, but what are some of the new technologies and or trends that are shaping the future for energy, and how will us business owners be able to adapt to those new technologies?
Yeah, so I mean, everybody's been seeing, they call them renewable energies, right? You have,
right.
You have wind, solar, battery. You know, solar, I can see that's a good option, good thing to implement. Here in Houston though, we get a lot of rain, so you have to have sun to be able to have solar power. And battery power, there's some really cool technologies that are coming on that limits the amount of carbon emissions, right? So, but there's an argument there for the
right.
extraction of all the minerals, and it's about a 10 or 12 to 1 ratio of getting those, the chemicals and all the things that you need for for the minerals, for batteries and for wind and solar, and to build those out. So, you know, when implementing possibly a battery power, there's some cool technologies that have come out where a generator, a diesel or a natural gas generator, will basically charge up the battery bank. Okay. Then that battery produces power for a time where the generator shuts down. So it's cutting down your amount of fuel usage by, you know, 60 to 75%. So that's something that I've seen more and more of, and dealing with a lot of companies that are implementing those battery power banks. The problem isn't producing the power. It is storing the power.
Yeah.
So batteries and solar only have enough power to store for a minimum amount of time until they have to keep producing it.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the biggest challenge, is how do we store the energy, not how we produce it.
And this amazing expert that knows about power will be able to come into your home, into your business, and be able to, mainly business, because that's what you focus on the most, right? On the commercial side.
Yep.
But he'll be able to tell you exactly how to get all of that set up. And one of the other questions that I know many business owners out there have, as I do, I imagine that by putting in these, whether it's rented or you purchase the power, there's got to be some permitting involved, right? Mm-hmm. And you got to go through the city. You guys take care of all of that?
So we deal with contractors that do that. We're not a licensed electrician. We're not a licensed mechanical contractor. But we use a lot of companies here in the Houston area to implement and do that, whether or not it's for your home or for your business. So that's not a problem.
So whether it's natural gas or or diesel, all the electrical, you guys use master electricians?
Absolutely. All that's done.
Okay. Yep. So business owners don't have to worry about anything other than just contacting Andrew and getting the conversation started, because it's, like I said, this city is just, I don't know, we're just too close to the Gulf, you know?
And it's expanding. I mean, just the amount of pull on the grid from a house. I mean, Katy and Sealy and Brookshire, I mean, it's all expanding. So that demand on the grid, along with all the companies and the businesses that are going in, there's a lot of demand, and it's a good place to be.
Right.
Right. Houston's attracting a lot of good talent. So
fourth city, largest city in the U.S.
That's
so
it.
There's a lot of business here, and you know, a lot of businesses are moving to Texas and moving to Houston. So you're right, they are pulling on a lot more electricity from the grid. It's funny that you mentioned that, because not so long ago I was looking at a picture of Houston, downtown Houston, about, I think it was late 70s or early 80s, and it looks nothing to what it looks like now.
Nothing.
And it used to be just, you know, downtown Houston and maybe the Heights area down I-10 and all of those things. But now we've expanded so much more, and it's still just one company with a power grid, you know. We're talking about Pearland, we're talking about Sugarland, we're talking about Kingwood, you know, the Woodlands going all the way
it's
up
crazy.
There. And it's growing quite a bit. As I mentioned at another, on another show, it's no longer a luxury for a business to have a backup, you know, system to be able to conduct business.
100%.
Whether you are selling cookies or you're selling concrete, this business needs to continue, right?
Yep.
So, McCain Power Systems has been around for how long?
So 5 years now.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
Yep. Before that, I was with Mustang Cat here in Houston.
Okay. So you've got plenty of experience in the world of construction and engineering and all of that good stuff to be able to help these folks put all these systems in.
I'm not pretending to be anything. I'm not, but I know the right people to put in that situation.
Okay.
So we'll put together the right team if, you know, whatever your needs are, whether or not it be for business or for your house.
Right.
We do sell residential generators. We're a Kohler distributor. So, you know, we can provide a solution to your problem.
Right.
That's the biggest thing.
You reminded me of myself, because I'm the one that comes up with these crazy ideas, and I have to figure out how to assemble the team to put it all together
and to
be able to provide the client with the best solution possible.
My staff
because
agree with you.
Does have to have you do have to have you have to be able to delegate. Although when we're first starting a business, we're trying to do everything.
Yep.
But we have to learn to delegate and, you know, provide the customer with the best solution possible with experts like master electricians and whatnot.
That's it.
So, Andrew, again, thank you for being on the show. We certainly do appreciate you bringing your expertise, educating our audience, educating me along the way. But, you know, some of these folks are gonna wanna know, how and or what is the best way to get in touch with you and or your company?
You can go to our website, mccainpower.com. That's mccainpower.com, or just Google McCain Power, and all of our contact information is up there. And so on our website, as well as on the web.
One of the things before we go, I didn't even realize on the website, you guys have an inventory of a lot of equipment that you have available.
Absolutely.
Amazing. So that's something that, you know, to get an idea as to the equipment that you guys have on hand to be able to supply as quickly as possible. So I want to thank you for being on the show once again. It's been a blast, and you know, hopefully you'll come back and educate us a little bit more every single
time.
I'll try. We'd love to continue to learn every way that we can. So we appreciate you being on the show.
Same. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you. Absolutely. All right, folks, we have come to the end of this segment. We are going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back with another subject matter expert. So stay right there. We'll be right back. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of BizTalk. My name is Rick Gutierrez. I'm your host and your business advocate. I'm excited to be here with you and for you guys to be joining us here today. We're going to have a great show. We've got a great lineup of business professionals that are going to be showcasing all of their expertise and their journeys in business as well. We are excited because this week we've got a very highly educated expert in his field who's going to be educating us a little bit in the world of healthcare, and that is Mr. Yasser Sonbul, who is joining us today, and he is full of knowledge, and can't wait to hear how he's going to educate us, you know, in this market. So, Yasser, welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here. I know that you're always a very busy man. You must have your calendar very busy, but we're excited that you're here, and we want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We always have a great time on the show because we have, you know, subject matter experts. Everybody's an expert in their own field and they've been in business for a little while. But we also do like to ask questions within their field to showcase their expertise, but also, you know, maybe shed a little light into just business in general, how you got here and all of those great things. So what do you say we get started?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. So we know that you are a medical professional. You are a doctor. And, you know, first and foremost, we want to let our audience know who Yasser is and how our audience can get in touch with you. Perhaps you have a phone number or a website that they can check out just to get a little bit more information. So let's introduce you first and then we'll get started on the topic.
Sure. My name is Yasser Sonbul. I'm an interventional cardiologist. I'm actually from Minnesota. Moved here back in 2011 came here for worked for the Oakland Medical Group for a little while and then went into private practice and worked. Been on my own ever since 2013. Did all my training in Minnesota for as far as cardiology and interventional cardiology. And then came out here just kind of I was working in a small town and wanted to get to a bigger city, and so ended up in Houston. We have our practices in Sugar Land. It's been in Sugar Land for the last 12 to 13 years now. We really liked being out here in Fort Bend County and enjoyed it. So, you know, our office is attached to Methodist Sugar Land currently at this time. You know, you can call my office through our numbers on our website, which is sugarlandcardiologyspecialist.com. We're also on social media, Facebook, and we have a YouTube channel as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We see that website scrolling through there. And you guys being in the Fort Bend, Sugar Land area for about 10 years, are you guys focused just on the Sugar Land area or you service all of Houston and surrounding areas?
My focus has really been in Sugar Land only. So I kind of Sugar Land, Richmond, Rosenberg, in that area. I used to go out to Bay City and Wharton a little bit, but I stopped doing that. I just didn't have the ability to get out there as much as I'd like to. Okay. But my focus has mostly been in this area. Yes.
Okay. Perfect. We just wanted to ask that question because maybe there's somebody in the outskirts of Houston and whatnot, and they want to get in touch with you. They've already got the,
the website and all those good things. So, and we'll be sharing a little bit more throughout the course of this interview here. All right, so let's get into healthcare and your expertise here. Yasser, the cost of healthcare obviously is something that just seems to be like on the uprise almost every year, almost every 6 months. Obviously, there's, you know, health insurance that gets involved and whatnot. But let's talk about cardiac care. And why is so expensive? Why is it that is it becomes sometimes a situation where a lot of people may not go through with what they need just because of the cost, right? But I do know personally that there is a lot that goes into cardiac care. And so enlighten us a little bit as to what all it takes and the cost that it takes for to do what you do.
Sure. So, I mean, I think a lot of the cost of healthcare obviously is related to equipment, devices, medicines, et cetera, right? And so that's outside of, you know, physicians per se. So when you look at, for example, if you get a bill from a hospital, right, the bill is actually a lot of information that most of it is related to hospital costs, medicine costs, equipment costs. Your physician cost is probably the cheapest part of the entire hospital bill, to be honest. And the reason healthcare is so expensive, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but part of it is when you look at, for example, medicines. Medicines are designed by pharmaceutical companies, right? And so those pharmaceutical companies have to go through this extensive research process in order to be able to give patients these medicines. I mean, there's three phases just of a drug trial before the drug is actually allowed to be given to people, you know, on a routine basis by and prescribed to patients, right? And so the FDA approves it and all that. So when medicines first come out, they're what we call, you know, obviously not generic, right, at that point. So they're designed to a specific company. That company is the one that kind of sells the drug. And really the costs are set by the company and between them and insurance companies and pharmacies, right? So and so those costs are not set by physicians per se. But those pharmaceutical companies, unfortunately, you know, they want to make their investment back on what they did to research this drug. And so that's why, you know, first of all, medicines are expensive when they first come out. Now, there's a period of time where you're looking at about 7 years where a drug is labeled, you know, not generic until it can become generic, which means any company can start making this drug after a certain number of years and it's become cheaper. But actually, what ends up happening is pharmacies actually can regulate the price of that drug as well. So even if a drug is generic, a pharmacy may decide, like Walgreens may decide to say, well, I'm going to sell this drug for $50 for pills, right? And so, and the same goes for devices, right? I mean, these companies go through all this research and testing to see whether their device is safe to use on people exactly. And so they set the cost of it. And so that's what makes the cost of healthcare expensive. In cardiology, there's a lot of advancements all the time. I mean, it's a very, very growing and advancing field on a regular basis, whether it's in medical, you know, health, I mean, like prescriptions and medicines, whether it's in devices and technology. I mean, just think of the things that recently came out. If there was a recent article out about Baylor, you know, implanting this artificial heart in people, right? And this artificial heart is this pump that's designed for people with heart failure that maybe gives them an extra 12 years that allows them to live on it until they can get a transplant. I mean, that's probably not a very cheap device to make and test and make sure it's okay and safe for humans. And so, you know, it's just the way, I mean, medicine, and in the end of the day, as humanitarian as medicine is, medicine is a business, right, in this country. And it's a business run by hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, device companies, et cetera. And so that's just the nature of the business, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, a minute ago, I heard you say something about, you know, the pharmaceutical companies can also, you know, all of that cost just basically adds up, but it's those third party companies. I mean, you as a health provider, you could potentially regulate and or have control as to what the cost would be on your end. But when you have to get third party companies involved, then that's when we lose a little bit of control. And it's just, we have to kind of go with what, you know, third-party companies are charging and whatnot. So, Yasir, is there anything that either patients or healthcare providers, you know, working together collaboratively to make those treatments more affordable?
Sure. I mean, so for example, let's just take a common drug that people use nowadays, like Eliquis, right? It's a blood thinner. It's used for people with, let's say, atrial fibrillation, which is a common abnormal heart rhythm that we see to prevent strokes. It's used for, you know, people that have blood clots, et cetera. It's not a cheap medicine, right? And it's not generic. And so a lot of times I get pharmaceutical reps that give me samples of that medicine in my office. And so when I have patients, for example, that are on it, the best way I can help them is, you know, offer them samples to the drug to at least alleviate some of the cost of the medicine from them, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of these companies as well have programs that for patients, for example, that it, let's say financially they can't afford it, but they need the drug. Now that's through the pharmaceutical company itself, where they will tell, you know, go through their finances and see if they're eligible and actually offer them the drug at a lower cost or a lower rate, or even sometimes free, you know. But those are not things that I can do, but I have the resources that allows them to look into that, for example.
Right. Okay. Well, it's good info. I mean, every little piece of advice, every little piece of information helps, you know, not only the healthcare provider like yourself, but also the incoming patient so that they can, you know, better prepare so that, you know, it could be a little easier to bear with. Let me ask you,
a lot of medicines have a generic alternative, right? So, I mean, it's also incumbent upon us as healthcare providers to say, would a generic alternative do the same job? And is it almost as effective? Because when you look at the data for a lot of these medicines, a lot of it's pretty close, right? You're talking about small percentage points in variation. And so if a generic medicine will give the same benefit that a non-generic medicine would, then a lot of times I just, as a provider, will prescribe the generic medicine to make it simpler on my patients.
Right. Yeah, no, it makes total sense. Yasir, we've got about a minute and a half left on this segment here, and I think it's crucial for our viewers that, you know, could potentially be coming up with some heart-related medical expenses. What advice, you know, do you have for families that are trying to plan for such event?
You know, obviously, getting insurance is important. I mean, I think it's an undervalued thing. People think, you know, nothing's going to happen to me, but that's the whole reason we buy insurance, whether it's on our car, our house, and even our health, right? A lot of times it's looking into alternatives. For example, you can call different hospitals, different providers, et cetera, and figure out, you know, what the cost of something may be if you don't have insurance and what kind of payment options are available, things like that. There are health savings accounts that people can create. I mean, there's a lot of other possibilities that you can look into, but, you know, when it comes to heart conditions, I mean, I don't think nobody ever really plans on having a heart condition. So a lot of times these come as a surprise. And so, you know, that's, there's really no good planning for this financially, unless it's something, you know, that you are planning to do it for a different reason, but I'm not aware of it in the heart world where you plan for something like this.
Right. I mean, there could potentially be a situation where one knows, you know, that there might be a surgery coming up and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, most parts, you know, something like this, there's no warning. It's just,
right.
It just happens and you have to have it and it is what it is type of situation.
Right.
All right. Yasir, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Your knowledge is invaluable to all of us. It's something that we definitely need to know about and be aware of all of this. So I want to thank you for being on the show, and hopefully we'll see you again in many other episodes here on BizTalk.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back with another subject matter expert. Stay right there.
Hey folks, welcome back to BizTalk. We are excited that you are staying tuned in and still here with us. We are excited for our next guest, who has been on the show before, but he has got something specific that he wants to talk about today. And I am excited to have him back on the show because it's a topic that does not get talked about a lot. And so it's you know, necessary that we talk or touch this subject. And so I want to bring back Mr. Mark Lamplew back to the show. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. It's always great to have you. Great conversations. And I know that there is a topic that, like I said, it's not talked about a lot, but we do definitely want to give a shout out and our thanks to all of our first responders that are out there taking care of people 24/7. And so we're happy that we have such people that are dedicated to helping others at all times. So the topic for today, Mark, it has to do with enhancing mental health and support for first responders, which I think, as I mentioned, it's a topic that it's not talked about a lot, but I think it's important that we have this segment and you are an expert in this field. And so let's talk a little bit about, you know, the unique, or let's go this way. Let me ask you this. What are the unique mental health challenges that first responders face, and how does that, you know, affect, you know, how they go about their everyday to day process?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, first responder mental health is, you know, where I kind of got my start with marketing. I was very involved with helping programs and nonprofits that specifically treated or helped first responders struggling with mental health issues, suicide, PTSD, and things like that. I come from a long line of firefighters and police officers. I'm a fourth generation firefighter. My grandfather was a fire chief. My dad is the president of the fire department now. I was a captain. My great grandfather, they name an award after him and give it every year to the top firefighter for the year. It's called the JTL Award. So I kind of grew up around the fire service, so to speak. Right. So when I started doing marketing, I started helping these programs, and you know, many people don't realize, you know, and some do, some of the struggles that first responders have, you know, because of all the trauma they see and all the death and car accidents and overdoses and murder and all those things take a toll on an individual's psyche. Even, you know, first responders who are trained to, you know, handle those situations, it still becomes you know, a little more than some can handle, and you know, they need to reach out for help, but many do not because of the stigma attached to mental health and PTSD. And you know, the suicide rates for police officers and firefighters are much more prevalent and frequent than it is in the general population. There's many programs out there that are helping now first responders who have those issues.
Yeah, it's incredible that, you know, there are so many things that happen in a first responder's life, especially while they are on duty. They could potentially not see anything from a flip of a switch. They can potentially see some of the most, you know, horrific things. And those are things that they have to try to work with and try to work around and process and all of those great things. So we never think about these things, but, you know, it could potentially affect, it affects people in different ways, right? And some mm-hmm. get used to it, some never don't, and some need some, you know, assistance in processing that. So we appreciate you having that knowledge, and thank you for your service, you know, while you were a firefighter and your families as well. So have you seen, or how has the perception of mental health care for first responders evolved in the recent years? Have you seen something happening that to where it's a little bit more in everyone's eyes nowadays?
Yeah, so I would say it's definitely being handled on a department level much more than it was, say, 20 years ago. I would say the start of it kind of really happened around Oklahoma City and then 9/11. After those kind of tragedies, they started seeing lots of suicides and PTSD and started kind of saying, wait a minute, something doesn't seem right here. And now there's lots of programs and resources that departments provide peer support. There's foundations they can go to. There's programs. To give you an example, when I was creating the first responder program in Florida back in 2010, you know, there might have been two or three programs in the whole United States that specifically dealt with first responders. Now there's probably 300 or 400. You know, they're just starting to come up. Private treatment centers are starting to carve out, like, you know, niches and little tracks for first responders, because, you know, they have a lot different issues than the standard population would have in these type of facilities. So for them to feel comfortable talking about some of the things that they've seen or done, it helps for them to be around peers that have also been experiencing those same things. So there's a big change. I think it's being a lot more accepted. But I think there's still ways to go.
Yeah, there's always improvements, right? And some innovations that could potentially happen. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you touched on this, because that leads me to my next question that I have for you. What innovative therapies or programs have you implemented or that you have seen that have improved the outcomes for, you know, first responders?
So a lot of what they're doing with PTSD is a therapy called EMDR. That's kind of one of the newer modalities that they're using to treat this. The peer support systems that they're starting at different agencies. There's some nonprofits out there like Blue Help or First Help, which is for suicide and first responders. It's a nonprofit based out in the Northeast. The National Fall and Firefighters has programs, the Life Safety Initiatives. The National Volunteer Fire Council has a program called Share the Load. That is a free service for firefighters and their families that they can call. There's a outfit out in Colorado called First Responder Trauma Counselors. They have dozens of programs available that help treat first responders with suicide, PTSD, other mental health issues. You know, so there's a lot of them.
Yeah, I imagine that there's many different programs that are available, but there's got to be a way for these folks that don't know, for them to be able to get access to them. Is there a way or a local resource where most folks can either make a phone call and or get the assistance that they need?
Yeah, I would say if you just go to Google and look up first responder or firefighter share the load program, all the information for that will come up. Firsthelp.org is a website you can go to. If you search first responder trauma counselors, you'll find their information. The National Fall and Firefighter Foundation, which I think is NFFF.org, you know, they have a bunch of programs there that you can find and search. And then, the, you know, obviously the suicide helpline if you can't find anything there. But like I said, you do a little simple search now on Google for what you're looking for, and a lot of those resources that come up are very good.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Now, one of my last question for you, Mark, before we run out of time. How do you collaborate with local organizations and or agencies in your area to extend the support for first responders?
So we would go into departments, and I have done this personally myself, is offer like a stress support training for first responders. It usually lasts like an hour or two, and then after the training's over, you leave your information. That way there, if somebody needs help, they can reach out and call. You know, some states have the peer support networks. California has a really established peer support foundation with every department having members involved. They get reoccurring training every year. And then there's trainings at a lot of the conferences like FDIC, which is in Indianapolis every year.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I want to thank you for sharing that knowledge. I know that that's your background, and that is what you've been in the space that you've been there for quite some time. But I also do want to congratulate you, because I understand that you are moving out west and you are starting a new venture with Tim Moran Automotive Group. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when I was a firefighter back in the 2000s, I actually used to sell cars. Because I had a lot of time off in between. So I do have experience in the automotive industry. So I seen a post that they were looking for a new CMO, chief marketing officer. And I applied, I interviewed, and you know, they accepted me. So I'm going to go out, help them grow their sales out in the Southern California market. They have three dealerships now and are looking to expand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with your background in being able to determine, you know, human behavior and your background in other knowledges, you're going to be successful in your new venture. So congratulations on that, and we're happy for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for being on the show once again, you know, showcasing your expertise. And I know a lot of viewers, a lot of listeners are going to want to maybe have an additional conversation with you. How would they be able to get in touch with you?
Go to my website, marklamplew.com.
Fantastic. And they've got all the information there. They can just submit a form and be able to get in touch with you. So thanks again, Mark. We appreciate you. Thank you for all that you do. And we look forward to additional conversations and additional shows.
Thank you.
All right. We appreciate you. All right, folks, we have come to the end of this particular show. We appreciate you sticking with us and tuning in and learning all about business. So we look forward to seeing you and tuning in again on the next shows. Until next time, take care of each other.
This has been a Now Media Networks feature presentation. All rights reserved.